you want a vision of the future, Winston, imagine a boot stamping on a human face forever.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
Someone is trying to teach me a lesson in futility. Why am I the only one who isn't killed?
They will run you dizzy. They will pile falsehood on top of falsehood until you can't tell a lie from the truth and you won't even want to. That's how the powerful keep their power. Don't you read the papers?
The world is a college of corporations, inexorably determined by the immutable bylaws of business. The world is a business, Mr. Beale.
It has been since man crawled out of the slime.
Welcome to another episode of Our Interesting Times. It's my pleasure to have David Wemhoff back on the show. Of course, David Wemhoff is the author of John Courtney Murray, Time Life and the American Proposition, How the CIA's Doctrinal Warfare Changed the Catholic Church. His website is The American Proposition. There, he recently posted an article, American Impeachment, the COVID-19 Pandemic as Opportunity and Exposé. David, how are you doing tonight?
Well, I'm doing okay. I've got to tell you, Timothy, I feel a little bit of sinus, but a little bit of a sinus infection coming on. I'm hoping that maybe that is simply the springtime
yes.
weather here.
That's we're coming into allergy season. So.
Yes, actually, absolutely. Coming into allergy season, and it still remains cold. We got some snow out here in northern Indiana, and we're trying to plow through it, so they say, but I think it will improve. But let's all stay healthy. That's very important.
Well, this piece, you take an interesting angle on this coronavirus pandemic fear, the crisis, the lockdown or shutdown of large swaths of the American economy as a measure. The Trump administration appears to be signaling that it might be winding down the end of the month or end of the week. We'll see. There's a lot of controversy about the nature of the threat. I mean, I'm as suspicious of the medical cartel as I am of the banking cartel. And with this pandemic, we might be seeing how the two actually are working in tandem, at least to some degree, because there's been a lot of profiteering, a lot of backward dealing. Now we're talk about multi-billion-dollar, $100 billion bailouts for entire industries and stimulus packages. It's like 2008 or 2008 all over again. But this, as you write in your article, it just kind of shows the fragility and problems of the current economic system, the neoliberal order, the globalist system of long extended supply routes, dependence on China, and the financialization that occurs in all these crises, the consolidation. So I'll let you take it from there.
Okay, well, thanks, Tim. I mean, jump in anytime you want. And the first thing I want to say is perhaps some people will disagree with me here, but I think the COVID-19 virus is real, and I think that it is very, very dangerous. The information I have read from the CDC says that it's about 25 to 40 times more deadly than the flu. And it passes 2 to 3 times faster than the flu. And it affects mostly people who are over 60s. That's my demographic. And it can be spread by people who are asymptomatic. And there's a lot of research. There's a lot of stuff coming out. So it's really a dangerous disease because you don't know who's got it. And usually the younger people have, and they pass it on to the older people. The older people get sick and they die. So we see people dying in nursing homes. But I think what this is bringing up is a lot of very dark and nefarious things that, quite frankly, make me sick. And I'm writing another article in addition to the American impeachment article. I think what you're seeing is several things. You're seeing a crisis which is real, which is not being allowed to go to waste. I think you're seeing a fight between, you know, Trump and the economic nationalists and, you know, the economic internationalists, the globalists. So you're seeing a fight. We're all kind of caught in the middle. But I think that what is most troubling is what came out last Friday, which were the revelations from National Public Radio, and then Washington Post, and then Vox followed up on it, about Senator Richard Burr, who is the chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee. And he was making statements that were recorded surreptitiously to the Tar Heel Circle, which is a nonprofit group out of North Carolina, which is basically businessmen. I've looked at their website. You know, for $25, you can be a member. But, you know, it allows businessmen to come see what the senator has to say. And he's the chair of the Senate Intel Committee. So he's got a very important position. And so he makes a statement on February 27th that there's one thing, quote, "There's one thing I can tell you about this. It is much more aggressive in its transmission than anything that we have seen in recent history. It is probably more akin to the 1918 pandemic." And end of quote. That was February 27 of this year. It was the day President Trump was saying, "Nothing to worry about. We got it under control." And then Senator Burr was telling people in the Tar Heel Circle not to travel because this thing is dangerous. So, President Trump was impeached in the House of Representatives, right?
Yes.
They impeached him. And where did that impeachment start? Started in the House Intelligence Committee, right? About a ridiculous phone call in July of last year. Nobody gives a crap about a stupid phone call. You know, I think half the people think that it was a good move on Trump's part to keep an eye on Biden. Okay, so Intel Committee in the House is tied up with this thing until the beginning of February. The Intel Committee in the Senate is under a Republican senator. Okay. Now, there's one thing that my research and work has shown is that Intel is where it all comes together. That's where you have information. That's where you have the media. And that's where you have finance. And they all come together right there with the intelligence community. And they're all interested in the same intelligence. And the country that has the best intelligence services in the universe is the United States of America. And it's always been that way because the United States of America is able to tell what the Holy Spirit is thinking and to tell what the Holy Spirit's going to do before the Holy Spirit does it.
Now, what do you mean by that?
Well, the American intelligence community in August of 1956 said Roncalli is going to replace Pius XII, and he'll be followed by Montini. And that's what happened.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the Americans got connections with the Holy Spirit, with God. They know what God's thinking. So I think that based on my research and experience, when the Washington Post is reporting to President Trump in January that there are briefings being done by the intel community to President Trump in January, and that these briefings are about what's going on in China with the COVID-19 virus in January, that was probably pretty good intelligence. In any event, let's look at the facts. We know the president closed the border to China as of January 31st. Why didn't he close the border to Europe or to Mexico or to Canada? If you take a look at the travel statistics, if you take a look at the travel patterns, you have tens of millions of people coming to the United States from Europe every year. And a lot of those people travel elsewhere in the world, to include China. And as one article said today, and I'm writing another article here, which I hope will be up in a couple of days. As one article said today, there's a real tie between Iran and China and Italy and China. And so that's why you have so many cases in those two countries. And you have people traveling from Italy to the U.S., and you got open borders in Europe. So Europeans come to America and back and forth. So that's the question. Why didn't the president close all the borders on January 31st, knowing that this thing was, quote, much more aggressive in its transmission than anything that we have seen in recent history, end of quote? Why didn't he do it?
Hard to say.
Yeah. Could it have hurt business then? It could have. Is it hurting business now? Certainly. Certainly is. They're talking about the market continuing to drop. I think it's dropped 580 points today. A lot of people said, whew, at least it wasn't 2,000. Mm-hmm. You know, but it continues to make these huge drops with hundreds of billions of dollars being injected into the economy. Now, let's clarify that. The money is going where? It's going to backstop the money market accounts, which gives you stability in the financial markets. Okay. It's also going to provide liquidity to banks. And now they're talking about buying municipal bonds, you know, corporate debt, rebuying treasuries, just to flood the system with money. But the problem is, if people can't move around because their states lock them down and you got businesses closed, oh, how are you going to spend the money?
Yeah.
You do online shopping? You got to buy from Amazon? Their workers are dropping from the illness and from overwork. Is that what you're going to do? Is Amazon going to keep the economy going? Well, I suppose it will for a while. But then what does that do to other businesses in the economy? Well, it hurts them, doesn't it?
Yeah, it shuts down mom and pop operations, local businesses.
I think it does. I think it shuts down a lot of local businesses. And I think that what happens every time you have a financial crash like you did in 1929 and the Great Depression, and I think we're going into a depression now. You're starting to see the manufacturing companies shut down. Detroit shut down last week. Just today, the RV manufacturers, just 20 miles from where I live, are shutting down. So this is serious now. They're not making stuff anymore except medical masks. Yes. And trying to find, you know, some kind of medication for this. That's all they're doing. So that has a huge impact. It's going to throw the economy into depression. What you're going to see, like in the Great Depression, you saw about 2/3 of the banks failed. And so things became more concentrated. And then in the 2007, 2008, again, you had a lot of firms fail. Things came more concentrated in the financial and business sector. And that's where the real power is in America. It's in the financial sector. It's always been there.
Well, yeah, originally there was some tension between the landed, you know, gentry or aristocracy, if you will, American aristocracy, to the extent that it existed, and the money power, the international finance, you know, Hamilton versus Jefferson. And
that's right.
There was sort of a bargain struck between the two, but inevitably the power of finance won out.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Inevitably it did, because with finance, with money, you can do a lot of things. You can be a lot of things. Money gives you the power to do a lot. And what Michael Hudson, he's an economist, and he's very well known and very well respected, rather old, I think he's about 80 years old now. He's written a number of books where he basically described how the neoliberal system of free trade is basically beggaring all the developing countries. And he said in order for countries to be like the United States and the UK, they had to impose tariffs and build up their industries. Mm-hmm. Then when they got to that point of power, their financial power, their dollar, their currency had real power, and they could really do things. But these other, the smaller countries, the developing countries, are just simply being colonized, which I think is something John the 23rd saw when he wrote his encyclicals, Mater et Magistra and Pacem in Terris. But, you know, the Catholic intellectuals over here poo-pooed it. But he saw that as a new form of colonialization, that was going on. But once again, you know, the Catholic laity didn't buy into it because they can buy into the American system and move up as long as that system is approved and good in the eyes of the church leadership. So what we have is we have a real concentration of economics and power going on here. There's a number of articles that came out today saying that the government's going to have the power of life and death over industries. Now, the big ones are going to survive. I mean, the airline industries will survive for the most part. You know, I remember a time there were a dozen major airlines. Now, what are they? It's like maybe three, mm-hmm. you know, major airlines. So you have this constant winnowing, sometimes with the help of the government. So you have this constant winnowing of the competition, this constant concentration of economic power in the United States, and that's the essence of capitalism. John Kenneth Galbraith was an economist. He was born in Canada. He worked in the Kennedy administration. He was the guy who was the ambassador to India. A lot of the economic gurus today, you know, laugh at him, but I think he had some very cogent insights on the American system. And he said in his book, American Capitalism, that what you have in America is you've got a system that allows for the concentration of economic power. And the way he wrote it is really fascinating. He says, quote, the relatively free, individualistic economic environment of the economy is a fertile ground for the most efficient, the most courageous, the most fortunate, or the most crafty producer to conquer rivals in an effort to become free from the regulatory powers of competition. Okay, and so the business cycle, too, he said, has probably embedded the tendency towards a monopoly or the concentration of power. And that is something that is assisted by the government, and that is something that the government then is more malleable by these powerful, concentrated economic interests. And it's a fight that has been throughout U.S. history.
And, I mean, if you look at the Trump administration, of course, I think Mnuchin, Goldman Sachs alumni, right? Alumnist.
Yes, and then he had a couple of other firms that he was the president of, and he caught a lot of attention, negative attention, because of the way he handled the people who were debtors and elderly.
Well, he made a lot of money off foreclosures, if I remember.
That's my understanding too. That's correct.
Yeah, and he basically was given the mortgages. And then he was able to foreclose and make a lot of money off it, a part of that 2008 deal. I think the Trump administration is more Goldman Sachs, former Goldman Sachs, once a member of Goldman Sachs, always a member of Goldman Sachs.
Yeah, right.
Than the Obama administration and the first Bush administration combined, or W. Bush administration.
Right.
Combined, and when you have the Treasury Department being run by Goldman Sachs, you know, and J.P. Morgan, perhaps, it's going to, you know, obviously policy is going to be twisted to benefit those interests.
They're not going to forget where they came from.
Yeah.
You know, they're just not going to forget where they came from. I mean, Draghi, who was the ECB central bank, he was also Goldman Sachs, too.
And Goldman Sachs was key to cooking the books in Greece. Was bond fraud. And they're the ones that loaded the country down with debt. Money, credit, thin air. That's a very important point. And then once the collapses, they can come in and start buying up Greece for a song. And that's, you know, but no one at Goldman Sachs is held accountable for that.
No, nobody's really ever held accountable, are they? You maybe get some lower level functionaries who are prosecuted, and maybe they have to pay a fine, but it's nothing. It's nothing that, to them, it's just a few thousand or a few million dollars. They can mm-hmm. pay that. That's not an issue. But you're seeing this concentration. And so you've got to ask, you know, why weren't the borders closed? And, you know, all of this thing with Senator Burr broke on Thursday. It kind of spilled into Saturday. And that's it. It's gone silent. It was spun as, oh, insider trading. But then as somebody said, you know, there's an exception for people
mm-hmm.
in Congress. If they have information, they can trade on this information. That's ridiculous.
Yes, it is.
I mean, that is ridiculous that the leaders can do that, just like it is ridiculous to allow people to bet against the market. A lot of that has been banned in other countries. But in America, you can bet against the market, And so the enemies of Trump, this is kind of like this big fight at the highest levels of society, and we're all paying the price. You know, it's the pro-Trump and the anti-Trump at the highest levels of society. They don't like him. You know, the really rich people, they don't like him.
With intelligence agencies and covert operations, you know, black swans aren't necessarily spontaneous. They can be created.
They can be created, but they don't have to be created. And I've seen conflicting stories on this biofactory, mm-hmm. or this lab in Wuhan. You know, the president has gone back and forth on whether he believes that, you know, this was a weapons facility where something got out. And they can be created, but also you just take advantage of what's there. And this is what C.D. Jackson said. He said, psychological warfare is political warfare. You don't necessarily create the events, he said. You just take the events and you leverage them. So you've got the media leveraging this horrific virus that's coming into the country, saying Trump didn't do his job, driving the markets down. And as the markets get driven down, you get all the hedge fund guys selling short, making billions of dollars. They're against Trump. They're going to be able to fund Biden's campaign. And Trump can push interest rates to zero and give everybody in the banks and the industries free money. Mm-hmm. You know, their money for nothing and their chicks for free, as Dire Straits says. And so this just kind of keeps the thing going where he wants it to be. It's this fight between these two nominally opposed forces that benefits both forces.
What's interesting, when you talk about these senators, it was in late January, February, after, you know, he assured the constituents that the coronavirus was nothing to worry about, and after receiving a private briefing, Senator Richard Burr and Kelly Loeffler offloaded stocks just at this time, but just before the crisis point. Burr, he also co-authored a piece to Fox News on February 7th stating the United States is better prepared than ever before to face emerging public health threats like the coronavirus. Right. Now, then they dumped a stock. Head of the Senate Intelligence Committee, Burr dumped 150,000 worth of shares at Wyndham Hotels and Resorts, which has lost 2/3 of its value, according to ProPublica, and $100,000 shares of Extended Stay America. Like, that's amazing. Burr also is alleged to have sold off 1.7 million in stocks, in addition to allegedly offloading stocks to the tune of 3.1 million. Loeffler and her husband, Jerry Spreaker, chairman of the New York Stock Exchange, purchased stocks February 7th at Citrix, a company that promotes remote working software and technologies. On January 24th, a full Senate briefing, Dianne Feinstein, James Inhofe, and David Perdue all sold off large amounts of stock. Feinstein is alleged to have sold off $6 million in stock from late January to mid-February. Perdue offloaded stocks in Caesars Entertainment, then also loaded up on $245,000 in Pfizer stock, a pharmaceutical company. Very interesting.
Boy, they had good advisors, didn't they?
Well, this is why their politicians are smarter than us.
You're right, and they're more profitable than us, and they're also less scrupulous than us, and they have no sense of solidarity.
Yeah, this goes to your point when you talk about the article by John Kenneth Galbraith, the more crafty. It doesn't mean you're making a better mousetrap. It means you're in a position to benefit from inside information, perhaps to plant information, to control to manipulate markets. And this is the problem we have with billionaires, because although allegedly they're capitalist and they believe in the free market and all that stuff, but once you attain that much wealth, you're in a position to leverage markets. You can leverage reality with that much money because you can control the media.
That's correct. Yeah. Absolutely correct, Tim. I couldn't say it better myself. And I got to tell you, Tim, the money has an incredible draw on people. The Bible is written about it repeatedly. They talk about the power of money, and the rare is the man who can resist the allure of money. Very rare is that man. And that's why Christ even said, you know, a camel get through the eye of a needle easier than a rich man can go to heaven, because of the draw of the money. And what happens is the money, the wealth, destroys any sense of solidarity our leadership has with us. Okay, that's what it does. It destroys any sense of solidarity or duty. And what the senators are saying now, oh, it was all ethical. Go ahead, investigate me. I sold it based on whatever, but, you know, it was all ethical that I did. Go ahead and invest. And that's how this thing is being framed. Oh, it's an ethical issue. It's an ethical. No, it's more than an ethical issue. It's a betrayal issue. Mm-hmm. It's you guys knew this thing was coming. You knew how bad it was because you had the best intelligence in the universe. Intelligence so good that it tells you what God is thinking. And you know what's going on in the ground in China. And you don't close the borders to America and start ramping it up for a virus? That's a pretty big breach of solidarity, Mr. President. And you That's a pretty big breach of solidarity with the senators.
And you have to delay response in order to make money before the panic.
Thank you. You got to know how to do this, man. Mm-hmm. But it's all ethical. And we're all in it together. Right, Tim?
But isn't this the same thinking that goes into why a company will outsource and, you know, shut down its factory and move to a miserable third world country where the people have been poisoned and weakened for decades by the same corporations? And then we got cheap labor here now because we've engaged in our intelligence agencies have promoted civil war for the better part of 30, 40 years. We have our local satraps who don't care if we dump poison and toxins. You know, that's all over Latin America, Asia, and Africa. China is a great example of that, by the way. Not caring at all about the workers and the water tables and the environment with massive industrialization to make products that we can now buy in Walmart. But this notion that these companies owe nothing to their home country, which gave them a country to prosper and established a legal system where they can prosper, even created something as called corporations with the courts created in the 1870s. This existence of the corporation is very interesting because it never existed before until this Santa Clara decision, which created corporate personhood, which is a part of a function. I think this is part of that. It's gone into creating a sort of a psychopath, an institutionalized psychopathy in our business world.
Well, I think that's a good point. And what you have, the basic law in business law is if you're a director, a corporate director, corporate officer, your first duty above all else is to make money. Okay? That is enshrined in all the case law, mm-hmm. all the statutes, all the codes of ethics. And as a shareholder, you want to make money.
This is fiduciary responsibility, right?
Fiduciary responsibility. It is the making of money. That's what it's about. Now, a year ago in April, there was this big convention in New York City, and all these billionaires got together and said, you know, we need to be more interested in not just making money, but caring for people. Well, of course, that was all crap because the laws are still the same. Mm-hmm. And you're based on a liberal, capital L, society where the individual is raised to preeminence, where the accumulation and enjoyment of wealth in the service of mammon is that to which America is dedicated, was dedicated, and apparently will always be dedicated.
And there's no social progress without outside the moral law. And, but there's a lot of money to be made in the process.
There's a lot of money outside the moral law.
Yes.
And it can be made if you're smart and clever enough.
Well, you can
make it and unscrupulous enough.
I mean, you can see in America's a great example of that. When the Dow was exploding and the stock market was growing, America was decaying. So there's a decoupling from these capital markets from real growth in the country. Because just the whole idea with stock buybacks with easy credit, money created out of thin air, where this is used to pump the stocks, where people's stock options are worth more. But it loads the company down with debt so you can, you know, enrich the executive, the CEOs and people on the board, but it leads the company in debt. It's not producing anything. Then when the market tanks because there's no funny money anymore, they can cash out because they have intelligence, when the market tanks, they can come back in and buy things up again and start the process over and over again.
That's right. They've got connections. They got access to capital. There's going to be a lot of free money out there. Now, everybody else went along with them and watched the 401ks rise.
Yes.
I was talking to a friend the other day. He's lost 30% of his 401k in the last 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. Well, this is disastrous. You're beggaring people. Mm-hmm. You're crushing people. Okay? And societies, governments are there to exist for two main reasons, the ancients found and the Catholics confirmed, is one, it's for the security of the people, which means that you're there to make sure they don't get invaded, from other people. But they also have economic sufficiency. Mm-hmm. And the second one is unity. Well, in the liberal system, capital L, in America, you have neither. You've never had those two things. You know, we're told of this enemy. You know, we're always told of enemies. One enemy. Now it's the virus. We've got to unite to fight the enemy. When it is the elites, it's the upper class that let the virus in. And well, they didn't prepare us for it.
It's part of their modeling.
That's their modeling. That's correct. And it sickens me to say this. And it sickens me to read the reports, you know, from last week of Senator Burr. But that's the conclusion I have to draw based on the power of American intelligence assets, because they're able to tell you what's going on, and they work with the financial markets, and they work with the elites, and they work with the media. And so you have to look at this and say, somebody knew this was coming. I mean, if they're locking down 400 million people in China, do you think that's going to escape the station chief and the CIA and Peking? I don't think so. I don't think so. So what you have is you have a lack of solidarity in America. You have a concentration of wealth and the beggaring of people. And what you're starting to see now is some feeble attempts, you know, to give money directly to people. Between $1,200 to $3,000 a family.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, Andrew Yang was talking about a UBI, universal basic income. It's a great idea. Why not? They were talking to the guy from Chicago. I think his name is Richard Thaler, the economist. He said when people have got their basics taken care of, they're much more willing to be entrepreneurs. When you take care of their economic needs, mainly their medical needs, they're much willing to be entrepreneurs. They'll take the risk. It's not a problem. They can do it. But when you have people fighting for their next dollar, mostly with each other and divided against each other, they have to take whatever crumbs are thrown to them. So it's a divide and conquer strategy that is leveled on the American people who are trusting, but who also don't see any other system out there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, someone observed that the Americans are getting a taste of what economic sanctions are like.
I think that is a great,
you know,
a great.
And by the
analysis.
Way, throughout this crisis, sanctions were maintained on Iran.
So that's right.
Supposedly hard hit by this, and that shows you, you know, the. But, you know, this is, you know, and yeah, if you're arguing over the last few rolls of toilet paper, you're not going to, you know, really think about, you know, who the true tormentors are, what's really causing this. If you're in this, the bread line, you're worried about getting that piece of bread. You're not worried about, you know, economic policies and trade policies and globalization and, you know, and, you know, $10 trillion bailout of markets and these things. People would just start fighting with another, and that we saw that. And it's amazing to me just how Americans so quickly can be reduced to just in a matter of days and not hours, just to panic, you know?
Well, Americans can be pretty resilient. But you have a lot of fractionalization in society. So, you know, if you don't have family or friends, you know, you're in trouble. And I mean, this is just a wonderful opportunity for the Catholic Church to weigh in.
Oh, well.
And pull its children together. But are they doing that? I don't see.
No, they closed. They closed the churches in my diocese. So.
Yeah, and they're not having masses, and you know, I got an email from the pastor. You know, I mean, I guess he's keeping social distance. Okay, yeah. Great. But you know, they need to do something about the people. But listen, going back to your point, Gustavus Myers wrote more than 100 years ago. Well-known journalist, well-known author. His commentary on America, I believe, is unchanged. He wrote books in the early 1900s where he said, what you have is a political system which basically does nothing. It just keeps people tied up in the moment over issues that will not change anything. And the basic fundamentals don't change. And basically what he was talking about is the rich and powerful keep their control on society and on the businesses, and they keep the pressure and the light away from them. And so that's why you have all this division in American politics. You have all this division, keep all of us fighting each other with all these crazy labels. All this division is created by the same people with the resources and the power to do it. And there's no check on their power. If you had an established church, if you had an other principle guiding society, like maybe a sense of nationalism, I mean, nationalism that's based on ties that bind, like culture and language, shared history, and yeah, genetics. If you have that kind of a nationalism, it can check the greed of some people, just like religion can check that greed too, if it's an established religion. But you don't. So, but you don't have that. And that's why this whole thing with Senator Burr, and Senator Feinstein, and Senator, what's her name, Lechfeld, and Imhoff, all this stuff is just kind of gone into the rabbit hole. We don't hear anything about it anymore, do we?
No.
Because it's too dangerous. You have the Senate Intelligence Committee chair, the guy who gets classified briefings regularly, being told what's going on in China. Mr. Senator, they've locked down about a third of the population. Why is that? Well, there's this aggressive virus that's sickening and killing people, and we don't have any immunity to it. Ooh.
Well, his reaction is to sell stock.
Yeah, sell stock. Ooh.
And apparently give out false information too. But so.
Well, he didn't put anything out till the end. Then he just talked to people, you know, in the Tar Heel circle. But globalization was also a creation of the American elites. And that's something which is burning the American people right now, because the virus is here because of open borders. And, okay, you close the border to China, but, you know, you still got the border to Europe and Mexico and Canada, you know, and millions of people coming in. Those borders still open. You still got globalization. You still got people moving around. Globalization is global capitalism. And what it says is we got to have the free flow of cash and of people and of goods and of services. You got to have that to keep it going. And so, you know, that's a primary concern, because that's what the profits of a lot of people, P-R-O-F-I-T-S, the profits of a lot of people at the top hinge on, and a lot of the hoi polloi tag along because they invest in the market, trusting it's going to keep going up. And now they're hurting, and the richer get richer.
And also just exposes or reveals, well, I mean, the true nature of the political class, the managerial classes, who are their loyalties to for? Their, you know, their constituents, or, you know, they're the oligarchical masters that they ultimately serve, and they're allowed to wet their beaks with millions to protect the billions and trillions of the oligarchs.
Well, that's right. Their loyalty is not to us. They just want to pacify us.
Yeah.
Because they're afraid of us. Okay. They're afraid that people are going to wake up and look at the guys and gals. I don't want to be sexist here. Yeah. But look at the people in the big houses and see how they live and how much power they have, because that's what happens in every other country, okay? The people, the hoi polloi, realize are being taken advantage of by the aristocrats or by the wealthy and the powerful, because there's a lack of solidarity, and they rise up and they drag those people out and shoot them. That's how it works in a lot of countries. Right now in France, right now, the reports are coming in that the medical professionals and the nurses are filing lawsuits saying basically what I just said. You guys knew this thing was coming. You have threatened our lives and the lives of the people of France as a result. And the people on the front line are the healthcare professionals, and they're dying in the dozens. Okay, and they're saying, you guys in France knew it was coming. You had the intel. Now, they're bringing a lawsuit, you know, a nice peaceable way to try to resolve it. But you know, that's what the political system is about. So if you don't like what the Republicans did, what Senator Burr did, if you don't like what Donald Trump's done in handling this crisis, then you can vote for the other guy, right? You got to vote for Joe Biden? Is that who you got to vote for?
Yeah.
Sleepy Joe? The guy who's in the pockets of the hedge fund managers who helped to drive the market down? By the way, what happened to Trish Reagan? Where is she? What happened to her show on Fox News?
Yep.
Where are you? Trish, where are you? Are you listening? What happened? I turn you on every night. I don't see you. Did you say something you weren't supposed to say? Yeah, she did. She talked about the hedge fund people.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And, but, I mean, you speak of this system we live under. It's obviously, you know, that we have this crisis, and whatever reality is behind it, it's being exploited. And now, you know, if you're not in Mr. Mnuchin's, you know, Rolodex, I don't think you're going to be getting much, you know. But like you said, the government's put in a position of deciding what companies live, what companies don't. And I don't think it's going to be the localized or small businesses, which do provide the majority of employment and also upward mobility for Americans still. If you want to, if you want real opportunity and growth potential, it's always with a small business, because that's where you can take responsibility and prove yourself. And this is being shut down. And that's one of the effects of these lockdowns, is that it's destroying hundreds of thousands of small businesses.
Sure.
And as you know, like I said, if you want to wonder why that is, yeah, you can see it as a health measure. But health measures are great cover for political actions. Just greater than national security, because they appear to be apolitical. And you have to look at the theater of it all. There's so much theater to these events now. The effect can prove the cause, and that's why you have to be careful with the media, because the media is not there to inform you, to give you information that you can act upon. It's there to scare the hell out of you. And that's been the function of the mass media ever going back to the late 30s. And so the problem is, the crisis we have today is we can't trust any political authority. We can't trust any media figures or institutions. And so, we can figure it out through the internet, perhaps, but that's a problem there. But we have to rely on our own judgment and critical thought. And that in order to have that, we have to not be fearful, because when you become fearful, you become reptilian in your thinking, you know, and we see that. So, that's one of trying to, figure these things out, figure out what's going on in the world, and relying on electronic media to tell us what's going on in the world. But the electronic media is linked into the intelligence agencies who are tied into the business interests who want to fleece us and exploit us and terrify us. It's quite a dilemma.
Well, it is quite a dilemma. And it's one hell of a system, I'll tell you that, because people think it's the greatest system on earth, and it's provided a lot of material goods. But you have to also realize America was geopolitically situated in such a way that its founders saw it as a jumping off post to basically take over the world. And they also saw it, too, Europe as the enemy. I mean, the American founders hated Europe. They wanted it destroyed. And so you see this thing from its very inception as something other than what it's not. So what you always get is you always get this idea that we're based on the rule of law and on principles in America, and that's just absolute crap. I mean, the only principle is pragmatism, whatever works.
Well, look at now, what rule of law now when they're out there? What law allows them to create trillions and trillions of dollars to bail out corporate debt? Is there a law in the books that allows that? No, it's very pragmatic, isn't it?
Well, it is certainly pragmatic. It's based on the idea of trying to keep the financial system liquid, because that has been threatening to seize up for a very long time. Yes. And this is going to help to keep it from seizing up yet again. So there's a lot of free money
of the banking system they created. They created it intentionally to be unstable so they can have these various crises to exploit. It's one of these things where they don't want it to be stable, because that limits growth potential. It limits the profits from usury and from inflationary growth. Remember, this is all financialization. And this is the function of the economy, where they exported America's industrial capacity so you can make money off financialization, paper. It's paper wealth. You know,
I think that is true. I think you saw John Kenneth Galbraith say the same thing. Mm-hmm. The business cycle is what helps his concentration of financial power. And you saw Ray Dalio say it just recently, too, in his book Principles. He's talking about the same thing. This business cycle is what, is the way this system works. And basically, you can make a lot of money from it if you know what you're doing. Well, if you have a lot of money, you can control things. Are there principles? No, there's no principles in America. The principles are pragmatism. They talk about, pick something, separation of powers. What's that there for? It's there to make sure that nobody gets too powerful. And a lot of people are upset at Trump because he's too powerful. It's a way to put a check on the interests that are not financial or not sufficiently economic. But when they talk about rule of law, I mean, it's just laughable, because you have to go back and you have to remember, Oliver Wendell Holmes, who is the big positivist law guy. He lived through the Civil War. He saw some of the most horrendous fighting of that war. And he said, there's basically no morality in the law. The U.S. Supreme Court has most recently affirmed that in Lawrence versus Texas. But the United States is based on the First Amendment. That's the heart of this experiment. You take the First Amendment away, you don't have America anymore. You take the First Amendment away, you don't have separation of church and state, and you don't have a free press anymore, which means now that you can actually have the culture and the society in the care of the churches, who will have real power over the wealthy and provide some kind of check on them and some kind of check on the government. That's the essence of the American experiment. So what is the rule of law? They say law is made because you got the three branches of government, and they sit down and they deliberate. Ah, baloney. In the Catholic understanding of law, it's Catholicism. It is God's law. It is God's rules. It is the moral order according to God. And that is what law is if you're a Catholic. So what you got is you got rule of statutes in America, and that's all positivistic. So you can't have rule of law if you don't have law. So what you got is a process which is generally beholden to the most powerful in society, to the interest groups in society, and that's what you have making your statutes and deciding your cases. I hate to say it. It breaks my heart to say it, but I think that's the reality of it as you look at these decisions and study American history.
Mm-hmm. And this is why even in the midst of a crisis, whatever it is these interests are swooping in to make even more money.
Well, that's right. And see, these people have incredibly flexible minds. The Americans have incredibly flexible minds. They're incredible pragmatists. A man by the name of Carl Schmitt, he was a German jurist. He was a Nazi. The Nazis kicked him out, but he was a Catholic. And he studied America. And he said America's got this incredible sense of pragmatism. It comes into a situation with principles and throws them out and goes and does something else. And that is a recurring theme about America. So what the American leadership is always able to do is they're able to lower the interest rates to zero. Okay, interest is zero now. Okay, all right, we're going to give everybody money now. We're going to make sure you get money, and we're going to protect the streets. I mean, stuff that government's supposed to do. But for how long is that going to last?
Well,
and for what purpose is that?
People won't be getting zero interest on their credit cards.
Well, that's right. The people who saved. I had a financial advisor tell me yesterday, just today. Today he told me. He said, you know, this economy is ridiculous. I said, whoa, you make your money, advisor. He said, this is ridiculous. He said, the interest rates are zero. People can't save. You're a chump if you save money. Well, wait a minute. You mean to say, what are you supposed to do with the money? He says, you're supposed to gamble it with the hands of other people.
Well, that's what they do. That's what they've done with the market. They made it impossible for people just to be prudent, defer gratification, and save and live off their savers, and you can, but then
right.
You got to play the market
because the system does not allow for virtue.
Yeah.
The system, the political economy, which elevates the individual and is in large measure based on capitalism, does not encourage virtue. And why is encouraging virtue so important? Because Catholicism teaches us. That is the purpose of civil society.
And that consumerism, that short-term consumerism that that debt inflation allows, finances, you know, at interest, the cultural and moral effects on the community are, of course, deleterious. But, I mean, some of the this crisis, you know, when the lockdown occurred and all of a sudden so many people who are usually at work had to be at home and the schools are closed, so the kids are at home. But I read an interesting statistic. It said that 70% of women with children under the age of 18 work full time in America. That's not a sustainable system. That is depopulation. That's exciting decay, because I know I'm going to sound sexist, but when women spend most of their childbearing years working for some corporation or for some company or working, you know, and not raising children, society isn't sustaining itself. There's no growth potential there, really. And
no, children become a burden.
And they become a burden or wards of the state, you know. And so when a crisis like this hits, there's no social capital to deal with it. Like there was in the Great Depression, where the money economy collapsed, but there was a lot of wealth in terms of social capital. America is still agricultural. There's people there who knew how to take care of themselves and provide help. And so it was they were able to get through it. You know, if you had a farm and you were largely out of the money economy to begin with, so the economy collapsed, the effects were limited somewhat. But if you're all into the money economy, you know, what's real wealth? The system brings in the question, really, wealth is. What's wealth? Is it paper? Is it, you know, 401ks? That's all an illusion. It can, and people know it can go away like that, But if really, if you count your wealth in terms of like, you know, well, one thing is entrepreneurship and labor. That's real value. But there's property, resources, food, and these things, tools. But we've gotten so far away from that with the financialization that's occurred in the past 45, 50 years, and the American economy is largely an illusion, a hologram that's based on bluff or military power and intelligence agencies. But there's no there, and we're learning that. And perhaps
there's no us.
There's no us. Sure. And in this crisis, like I said, there's a silver lining is that perhaps people really discover that the system that's been set up the past 40 years isn't good for us. It needs to be reevaluated. You got to shift the production back to the country. You have to stop worrying about upward mobility and moving around and chasing a buck and looking for some stability in life. You know, we don't have to have all the things we have, you know.
Well, I think there's a lot of truth in that, and I agree with that. But America is based on individual bettering his life, the Horatio Alger story. Mm-hmm. So what America is based on. That's really what abortion and contraception and gay marriage is all about. It's really about allowing you to advance socially when you don't have burdens and doing what the wealthy and powerful want you to do so you can advance and get in that top tier.
Well, yeah, abortion is necessary to break the glass ceiling, yes.
Absolutely. That's why it's there.
That's what it's there for. And they've so much admitted that in legal decisions.
Yeah, they have.
You're they right. Have. Casey, I mean, it's like
Casey,
okay.
Casey versus Planned Parenthood. Yeah, so, that was it right there.
So basically, hey. you got to sacrifice your babies to Moloch in order to chase a buck and to have status. It's interesting enough that during the lockdowns, I think in New York and California, one of the essential services that are allowed to stay open are abortion clinics.
Isn't that amazing? Incredible. Well, but you know, kids are, I mean, being pregnant, it could be a real problem, I suppose, in this kind of society where you don't have any sort of solidarity. Solidarity is a form of wealth. You're right. Labor is a form of wealth. Land, those other things are. But so is solidarity, when you can count on each other, when you can stick together and say, we're part of a team.
Yes.
We're part of a community. We're us. They're them. Oh my God, that's ethnocentric. I can't say that. I just did. We're us. They're them. There's nothing wrong with that. That's the way it's been since the beginning of time. That is part of God's order. That's part of God's law. That is acceptable. And what America does is, oh, no, you're all individuals. Oh, no. You know, you can't, you know, we're going to create the groups and you just shut up otherwise.
Yeah, it breaks down boundaries. Men and women can't even be separated anymore.
No. It breaks down boundaries. This is what Fanfani wrote about in Catholicism, Protestantism, and capitalism. Capitalism breaks down borders. It breaks down boundaries because people want to accumulate and enjoy wealth. That's what it does. And that's what America is based on. And that's why you have to get rid of established religions, especially Catholicism. Ah, we can't let the papists tell us what to think or do, you know? And that's the way it's been from day one. And that's the First Amendment. And the First Amendment talks about rights and protecting rights, and that's all crap. And what that is just a way to keep you atomized and at the whim and the beck and call of the rich and powerful. That's what it means. Good luck.
Yeah, they talk about social distancing, and boy, they've done it already.
They've done it. You're right. They've done it for a long time. I mean,
mission accomplished. I mean.
Right. So, I mean, you know, you are where you are on the ground. The people around you are the ones, you know, you got to look out for. This is a very important need, I think, that the Catholic Church leadership could fill if they would, you know, start to say, you know, there's us and then there's them. It's like us is like important. We are Catholics, you know, and, you know, a lot of us, you know, happen to be white, you know, so we're of European descent. So, you know, this is all good. Let's build this up. Let's give each other a reason, you know, for building up who we are and what we are, because we are good. We're not bad. The hell with the media telling us we're all bad and wrong. You know, this is what they could be doing. And in these moments of solidarity, you know, in these moments of isolation, they could be doing things, staying in touch. You can call people on the phone. You can do other things like that and just try to stay in touch with your friends and neighbors. And I encourage all the listeners to do that. Check on people. You know, call them, check on them, see how they're doing. If you know, go see them even, you know. But, you know, I know you got to be careful because nobody knows who has this thing. And that's been the problem. They don't know how widespread it is. So, you know, that kind of begs the issue. If you're going to close the border with China on January 31st, why did you keep the border with Europe open until, what, March 17th? You know, why did you keep the border open 6 more weeks, Mr. President? What's the value of that? don't get it. And so what's going on, too, there's another agenda. There's always a lot of agendas going on. You know, there's always a lot of things going on. So the American elites want war with China. Okay, big surprise here. I'm sorry, it's a spoiler. But they want war, and there's going to be a war, okay? There will be, a kinetic war. There's already different types of war. There's economic, which always is currency, economic, then shooting war.
Yeah.
And in the meantime, they're doing other kind of cyber war and propaganda war, but all that's going on. But it's going to boil down to a shooting war.
Well, China was built up by the American elites, and now what, they've gotten too big for their britches?
Absolutely. They want their space of Asia, but more importantly, the communists aren't really communists.
No.
Dang it.
Well,
they're nationalists.
Yes.
We can't have nationalism. George Soros is putting $1 trillion into fighting nationalism around the globe.
Yes.
We can't have nationalism. That's evil. Don't you know that's evil, Tim, to be a nationalist?
Yeah, to actually care about a plot of land and the people that live in that plot of land.
Oh, my God. You mean to say there's us and them? Oh, my Lord.
Well,
you have an identity?
If you're anywhere concerned with blood and sorrel, you know what that means.
There you go. You got it. This is what, there's a lot of things going on. There always is at one time.
Well, and what's difficult is that Americans, and this is what why your book is so important and your articles, is that America isn't what Americans think it is, right? I mean,
No, it is not.
Yeah.
It is not. The American ideology, which is liberalism, capital L, which founded this society, okay, it's been condemned by Catholicism, folks. It's been condemned. I mean, Pius IX condemned it, Leo XIII condemned it, the popes condemn it. They are, and even Dignitatis Humanae basically said you have a responsibility to follow God's law. That's the highest norm of human action. I mean, it's in my book. I describe paragraph and verse. Okay, that's what you're supposed to do. So this thing, in the minds of most people, is viewed as the end-all be-all. It's good in principle. They can't think of anything opposite. Oh, no, we don't want socialism. Oh, no, well, we don't want communism. Well, these have all got bad connotations to them. And nobody knows what the Catholic confessional state is, but the Catholic confessional state is for the benefit of everyone. And this is the opportunity that we have now as Catholics, is to sit there and educate people on an alternative to this system that's wiping out their 401ks, that's making them cower scared in their homes. And believe me, I know you've probably been out, and I've had to go out to various places. And I'm telling you, people are scared.
Yes.
I mean, there's a lot of people out there, but they're scared, okay? I mean, do you want to live in fear because your leadership decided to keep the back door of your country open for 6 weeks longer when they knew the threat?
Yeah, and the Catholic faith doesn't make you scared of death. So.
No, that's right. But, you know, nobody wants to die for a stupid thing like this.
No.
I mean, you know, I get it. You know, I get it. If Trump closed the borders on January 31st, we're going to start ramping up to this. I get it, you know. And then somebody, you know, comes down with it because people snuck in or got in, you know, before January 31st. I get that. We understand that. We're in it together. But when you got a 6 week lag time with the travel patterns and with the intelligence agencies sounding the alarm.
But, you know, the fact of the matter is, maybe it's late in the talk, but is the even a worst case scenario, the death toll pales in comparison to a 6 month economic shutdown. Because you would have so much social upheaval, crime wave, millions. You're talking about death toll in the millions, above and beyond.
If it is 40 times more deadly than the flu, you could be about 1.5 million.
Which still, I think, over the long economic shutdown, the Great Depression killed, they estimate, prematurely about 10 million people just because of the effects.
Right.
And that's a country that, again, which is much more cohesive and lot more social capital than it has now. So they've created a system, you know, which is long supply chains. Any little disruption causes this. So now,
that's right.
If we get, maybe we'll get a, I think we'll get a reprieve this time, and maybe start to rethinking this.
Well, Well, that's absolutely correct. And globalization, economic, in international economics, was basically created. You know, I'm going to get in trouble here, Brian, but it was the globalization idea was created by the Americans. I talk about that in my book, May of 1952, May 1954. They met at Princeton. That's where they all came together and formed this system. Okay, and then what Steve Bannon is saying, you know, he's talking about economic nationalism, which is what Trump is supposedly behind too. You know, you're a U.S. citizen. Once again, how do you become a U.S. citizen? You get born on this soil. What an incredible concept. You just get born. So it doesn't matter who your parents are. You're just born in a space and a time, and suddenly you got legal standing. I mean, that's very rare in human history, I'm going to tell you. Okay, it's very rare because almost by its very nature, it severs your ties with any family going very far back. But so this is what you're dealing with. Again, you're seeing these things struggle. And the elites, these two ideas, you know, the international and the national economic system, to try to keep it together. That's what Bannon is trying to say. We got to try to keep this thing together. That's what Trump's trying to do. You know, wars and viruses are a great way to try to pull people together. As long as the media doesn't shine the light on what really was going on with Senator Burr and the other senators, you know, as long as they don't really show what really was being said, you know. And they just kind of let it fall to the wayside as an ethics issue. Okay, so that's how you keep people, you know, together to try to keep them unified and involved in the system. We got to vote. Oh, you don't like the way Trump handled it? Well, vote for Biden. Yeah, right. Okay. Oh, you don't like what Burr did? Oh, vote for a Democratic challenger. That way we keep everything quiet and controllable.
sick of corruption? Vote for Joe Biden.
Vote for Joe Biden. You don't want corruption. You don't want corrupt Americans. Vote for the corrupt Americans in Ukraine. There you go. That's how you do it. So this is what people are starting to see. They're starting to see there's really no checks on this system. And the fact that there are so-called quote-unquote principles, they don't really exist. I mean, you know, there's just a question of pragmatism, whatever works, which is ultimately – the service of wealth. And if you're good enough to get in the top percent, you know, you have a good life and control the show.
And if
but not everybody gets there. Everybody has that hope. Everybody wants to be a star. You know, they want to be a star out in Hollywood, right? Everybody wants to be the new James Dean or Marilyn Monroe, but very, very few are chosen. Everybody wants to be the next Bill Gates. Very, very few make it. Everybody wants to be the next billionaire, you know, David Rubenstein. Yeah, very few make it, don't they?
Yeah.
Very few.
Yeah. And once you and the few that do, they have nothing but contempt for those that don't. So
that's correct. That is correct. They have nothing but contempt for the rest of us. You're right about that.
It is strange, the psychology of a billionaire. But okay, well, David, the piece is American Impeachment, the COVID-19 Pandemic as Opportunity and Exposé. It is at the American Proposition website. David, anything else?
I just want to say thank you very much, Tim. My website is, as you said, theamericanproposition.com. I'm going to have another article coming up very soon about some of the topics we talked about tonight. I post something on your YouTube channel when I get more information, but we're also going to have a discussion about the social kingship of Christ coming up on April 4th on crusade.net. And I think I want to tell everybody, please be safe. The virus is serious, especially for elderly people. And I'm one of the at-risk people, but it is serious. So treat it serious. Look out for each other. Love each other. Stick together. That's very important.
Okay. Well, good night and take care then.
Thank you very much, Tim.
Okay. Good night then. Bye-bye.
Bye now.
Darkness, darkness, be my pillow. Take my hand, let me sleep in the coolness of your shadow, in the silence of your deep. Darkness, darkness, I'm yearning for the things that cannot be. Keep your mind from cold. constant turning to the things I cannot see now. Things cannot see now. Darkness, darkness, long and lonesome is the day that brings me pain. I felt the edge of sadness. I have known the depth of fear. Darkness, darkness, be my blanket. Cover me with the endless night. Take away the pain of knowing. Feel the emptiness of night. Emptiness of night. Emptiness of night. Darkness. Darkness, be my pillow. Take my hand and let me sleep in the coolness of your shadow, in the silence of your deep. Darkness, darkness, be my blanket. Cover me with its endless night.